know I'm gonna. I'm now recording.
Yeah, because hipsters, it's there's so much like things that would be considered underground now, just because the only way of getting it is on the internet. So it's not really underground, but it's not like out there.
Well, I mean, ideally, the internet would be the opposite of underground. Like, the internet would be,
yes,
like the elevated walkways of things. But it's just that there are still old people who don't know how to use the internet. So to them, it's kind of underground just because they,
yeah,
can't do it.
It definitely, I think, it definitely seems underground just because it's not, like you're doing the internet.
When you're interneting.
When you're surfing the webs and going through the intertubes, you're very much alone. It's a very singular activity. Even if you're on with people online or stuff, it's still very much you and that. Whereas, and you could be controlling the entire thing, what you're seeing and everything. Whereas the other things is like, you know, like radio and TV and stuff, that's more out there and it's just going. So like you're watching this and so are tons of other people because it's no choice.
Actually, I would like to say, on Tumblr, I feel Tumblr is a lot like TV or radio. Because whenever I describe something on Tumblr, I always like think of it as like, oh yeah, something went by on Tumblr. Like something was there for a moment and then it was gone. Tumblr is a very sort of temporary thing. Even though you can scroll back and find it, but within like a day, most people are just like, I will never see that again.
Yeah, it's very... And that's what a lot of stuff that started up on the internet recently started doing that. And you get like Twitter and more stuff that is like very, very kinetic, moving information and stuff that just changes.
Something for people with short attention spans.
Exactly.
So something kind of teaching people to like let things go, which is...
It's like this is an actual part of your day-to-day, minute-to-minute life now.
In a very weird way.
Yeah.
or you just have to sort of learn to deal with the temporal nature of it. It's like, yeah, I didn't see what was there this morning, but I can see what's there now.
Yeah, and it's like,
which is kind of weird. Except, you know, there are people who can't accept that and will be like, no, I have to see everything from this morning. I know people who trying to check Twitter or Tumblr will spend, like, an hour or two when they get home just catching up on everything they missed from the day.
Well, I'm that kind of person, which I think is one of the reasons why I didn't get into Tumblr or Twitter.
Because it would just eat
you? I'm that kind of person, and I would have to be like, oh, I missed something. It was probably something really cool. I have to go back and find it now.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, this isn't cool at all, but at least I found it.
It's like, the problem is, like, people like that have always existed, just the internet is making it easier for them. Like, okay, so, like, Toonami on last night. The Toonami Digital Arsenal is something that has existed kind of along with Toonami, as far as I can tell.
Yeah.
And it's always been something about, like, well, you know, Toonami was a broadcast thing. Their job was to try and capture it and archive it. Where, you know, the internet is something just like, oh, yeah, we're just sort of archiving as we go along.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as long as this thing doesn't, you know, shut down, everything just kind of gets archived and go back. Unless you're the Library of Congress, in which case you start archiving Twitter, and then everybody just puts, huge dicks, # Library of Congress.
Oh, God. Well, because that's my thing. Like, if I had the capabilities, I would make a hard copy of everything I have saved on my computer.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I'm just like, I need to have it physically.
Well, there
needs to be safe.
Like, there's a lot of people who do that. And when I did archive at RPI, like, pretty much everything that ever went through that office, like, most of it was on DVD. Like, every time we recorded a class, it all got recorded to DVD. And then, you know, near the end, it's just like, okay, well, we have this stuff on DVD, but we never really use the DVDs. Like, they get recorded, and then we put them in a box, and then the box goes away. But then because we're simultaneously recording it digitally, and we actually use that, and we edit that, and we put that online, and, like, that never sees a physical form. The physical form is just, like, if everything else goes on fire, these will be fine.
It's like health insurance. You're paying money you probably will never see again. But, you know, if something happens, it's there for you.
Yeah.
And just knowing that it's there for you is nice.
What is it? It's like
stacks of DVDs in the closet. Yeah.
Oh, so many. You don't even know. We had, like, the sliding, like, the shelves that, like, slide out,
mm-hmm.
and then you slide them back in, and they're all flat. It was actually a pretty nice system, just full of DVDs and VHS tapes. We destroyed most of the VHS tapes.
Well, at the library the other day, I was looking at minutes from town meetings from, like, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Just because they were there. I'm like, wow, we have these. Why would this ever be important?
What, was there anything interesting in them?
No.
Okay.
No, there wasn't.
I mean,
there was something about flower beds by the road. It was weird.
I mean, the only thing that's really good for is if in future town meeting somebody wants to go back and pick on somebody who did something dumb a long time ago, in which case they're an invaluable resource to the community.
This is true. Well, yeah, it goes back to the thing of using history just to make fun of people.
Yeah.
Which is important because people do stupid things in the past.
People do stupid things in the past. They're going to do stupid things in the future. I don't want to alarm you. Stupid things are being done at this moment.
As we speak, stupid things are being done. Which is sad.
Live music.
Live music is happening right now? Yes, yes it is. Somewhere in this world.
Well, there's something I was sort of thinking about, like as an artist and like with live streaming and all that kind of stuff. Like I was thinking just like, okay, every time an artist does like a visual artist does something, they intrinsically have
a record
left over. They have the picture that they made. But, you know, music is different because like you can record a song and then that's left over, but there is such a thing as like a live music performance that the only record of those is memories.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because memories are like the worst archival device ever.
Yeah. Definitely. Like music, plays, stuff like that. I actually do that a lot because I used to do a lot of theater and stuff. And once it was over, I'm just like, wow, it's just in my head now.
Yeah. It's in the past. But it's weird. Like, it's not gone, but there's something about being in a head that, like, changes an experience.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you start getting to the point of just, like, wait, is that something that happened? Or was did I make...
Was there a dinosaur on that stage? I don't remember there being a dinosaur.
Or just, have you ever been like, okay, so the other night I was at the store, and then, oh, wait, that was a story I heard. That didn't happen to me.
Yes, I...
Like, it's even weirder when, like, memories are transferred. Because you don't actually transfer. You make a new copy. It's a lot like when they had to, you know, handwrite new copies of books. You couldn't just, you know, print... Before there was a master.
And it's a lot less concrete. Because you get the whole telephone thing going on. Right?
Yeah.
It's like, interpretation. I interpret things different than you.
But it's one that, like, we never see because it just happens inside of our head.
Yes, that we don't actually... Yeah, ironically, something we don't think about.
Yeah. Strangely. I don't know, there's some artists who try to play around with that, like that guy who uploaded a video to YouTube, ripped it off of YouTube, and then uploaded the rip, and did that like 1,000 times.
That was fantastic. I don't know, it was just somehow just kind of like beautiful. Just like looking at that and going, wow.
Well, because by the end, it was like some sort of like demon ghost.
Yes.
Just ugh. But then everyone's
this
going,
is
like,
within every video.
And then, but then, just like at the very end, it was just like this moment of clarity, and it's just like, oh yeah, I see a face, and now it's gone.
Yeah, just.
But it's, I don't know, it's like back from like I don't know. Ever since there's been like recorded things, there's always been this idea of like, here's a master. Every copy comes from that. But there's, I guess, the idea of degradation over time is something that's been around even before it, just from the nature of memories.
Yeah, and you do see that a lot in books and stuff, but only over a long period of time, especially when you have to translate through languages, is kind of the same thing, where it just becomes something different, and it just keeps going. Like there's, you have fun with that on the Google Translator, when you just translate things back and forth all over the place.
It's something about they took a phrase from English into Russian and then back into English, and the phrase was, the spirit is willing, but the body is broken, and it was like, the vodka is good, but the rock is cracked.
That sounds Russian.
Yeah, no, it certainly sounds Russian.
And it does have the same kind of meaning thing, and it's just different, because different people think differently, so...
And just the translation of spirits.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mainly.
It's like, well...
Languages in themselves are just annoying because there are words that exist in certain language for concepts that the concept exists in other cultures, but they never made a word for it, and so you can't directly translate it. And that's like the biggest... I don't know. I've seen that in church a lot because, you know, a priest will go into the homily and he'll usually end up talking about like, well, this is, you know, you have to take it in, like, you have the story, but it loses a lot of meaning when you take it out of context at the time and, like, the words that they had in the language it was originally written in, because, like, that contains a lot of things. Like, it's just, like, little words. Like, it's, like, I think it was also an episode of something, or was in National Treasure or something.
National Treasure.
Because it was, like, it was like the double bluff on word meaning, because they were like, oh, these are our treasures, like our we have hidden our most valuable treasures, and they were like, it was like a book that was written in that, but then it was like, no, don't you see, the knowledge is their most valuable treasure, these books are the treasure. And then it was a double bluff, because it turns out that the gold had been melted down and used in the ink that the book was written in. So it's like, no, these books do contain the knowledge. They also just contain the gold.
It also goes down to the thing that we don't really think about, is we have a lot of slang and puns.
Colloquialisms.
Puns.
Puns get so broken.
There's really no reason to think that they didn't have these, you know, like 2,000 years ago. All the in-jokes and all just the different slangs for stuff that we have no idea what the hell they're talking about if we were able to just get the guy over.
I mean, don't they say, you know, Canterbury Tale is just a sequence of dirty jokes?
Oh, yes.
Like, just completely.
It's hilarious.
But we kind of lose it because things have changed and we lose that context. Mm-hmm. Context is far too important.
It really, really is. Going back to the language thing is, depending on like where you are, you pay more and what's going on around you, you pay more attention to certain events than others, and so you'll focus more on those events and describe those events more. Basic ideas like the Inuits have like 200 different words for snow, and they don't all mean snow; they mean different types.
Different things. Like the dude in Hitchhiker's Guide, where he classified like 350 different types of rain.
Yeah,
and everybody's like, no, it's just rain. It's like, no. Yeah. If you know about it, it's different. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, I guess maybe a way people could relate to it is like guitar. Because like most people hear a guitar and they're like, oh, it's a guitar. But then the more you know about guitar, the more you're like, no, it's this kind of guitar. And he's playing this chord. He may have this kind of string. There's a certain tone and cadence. And it's just like, you know.
Yeah, knowledge is definitely a thing that
like it's almost
you look through. It knowledge is definitely a part of how people interpret things.
Yeah. There's this really weird, like, an internal context. Like, there's the context of the environment that, you know, like, well, in this language we have these words, and that's why it was written this way, and, like, you need to know that language and those meanings when you translate it. But at the same time, there's also this weird, like, internal context. Like, it's one that I think really breaks the definition of art a lot. But, you know, internal context is also kind of intent. Like, I forget if there's a specific example. People always say, like, oh, you know, the author, you know, takes a paragraph to describe the blue drapes in the room while this conversation is going on. And people come in and say, like, oh, yeah, well, if you look at the things in his life, it was this, and the blue and drapes were something about, the way that his mother drowned or whatever. And then you actually talk to the author, and he's just like, no, they're freaking blue drapes.
Because.
But, like, there is that sort of context. Like, you know, it could have been that way because there's, like, an internal context. Mm-hmm. Like, yes, I'm looking at it this way and I say it. You will not catch that, and there's nothing else. It's just entirely to me. Which, a person is a part of the context, then? Everything is context. Nothing is not context.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, it kind of annoys me when I took, like, you know, English classes and stuff, when they're like, oh, this is what this means, and this is what it means. Like, no, that's really just your opinion and other people's opinions of what that means. The only person who can really tell you what it is the original creator, who doesn't happen to be around at the moment.
And there's this weird thing that, like, I don't know, I've always seen that, like, art, you cannot put meaning into art. Meaning is entirely taken from art.
Yes.
Because,
yes,
like,
definitely.
Like, you, in order for the meaning to actually be taken by the viewer themselves have to connect that art to something in their life.
You, as the artist, you can have certain intents to try and put stuff in the art because you want people to interpret something some way, but overall it definitely comes down to the viewer and what they do get out of it.
Yeah, which is why there's always this argument over what is art, because, you know, whatever art is changes depending on who you ask. And, like, it really does change. If it's a matter of, you know, being able to invoke, it's a matter of what original intent was, which this is kind of a stupid argument because I don't think art is actually a thing.
Art doesn't exist.
Well, I think art is whatever somebody says is art.
Yeah.
Because, like, you cannot impart a specific meaning into it because you cannot control what people will get out of it. All you can really do is say, this is art, and have the intent to create art. Otherwise, you have just created something. The idea of, you know, artisan, you know, arts and crafts. The way we really did, I was talking with Aaron and Noah of the Ninja Consultants podcast about this. And we were saying, if somebody decides to hang a blank canvas on a wall, is the person who made the canvas the artist in that case, because they made all of the pieces of the art that went into it, but they never had the intent? Like, is the artist the person who said the intent is, I will call this canvas art and hang it on the wall? Mm-hmm. And then what role does the producer, if not artist, create? Sometimes artists are just jerks.
Yeah, this is very true. Because the thing with art, it's very conceptualized and goes a lot with the feelings of, like, emotion and stuff. Because it's the whole point is to
evoke emotion.
Something.
Yeah.
And so, like, it's the same thing with, like, music, of, like, why you like, this music is good and this is bad. It's all about the person, like, who is...
It's all about the viewer experience. Yeah. The only other way I've heard it is there's this phrase I've heard a couple of times that I never, you know, really tried to look up the origins of, but the idea of art imitates life,
mm-hmm.
which means that, you know, there's one intent of art can be to evoke something from a viewer, which, you know, maybe you can't evoke the right thing, but if it evokes anything, it has worked. But at the same time, like, that doesn't really work. Because things are evoked from anything. Like, you know, you see somebody throws, you know, it's that commercial. It's like where the lady throws out a lamp and then the lamp is sitting on the street and, like, it's raining and dark and the sad music is playing. And then the guy walks up, it is just a lamp. Do not feel sorry for it. Like that is the problem with looking at art as a matter of evoking, because people can have emotion drawn out by anything. Whereas if you look at it as a matter of intent, okay, artists can try to capture something or can set out to evoke something.
Well, I do think,
but, you know, it's like that is what defines it as art, because, you know, success of being able to evoke is not dependent on it being art.
Yes, this is true. I do think a lot of art, when it's made, is definitely from the artist when making art is attempting to capture something in his painting, whether it's for people who are going to view it or just for themselves.
Mm.
Really, they're kind of trying to capture something from their either feelings or intent into this kind of piece that they're creating. And sometimes that's in order to be like, oh, I feel this. I want others to feel this too. Let's try to do this. So that
try to capture that emotion. Yeah,
so
we'll
get that same kind of feeling. Although sometimes it's just for themselves. It's like, I just kind of want this for myself to just be able to do this.
In that sense, aren't, you know, the people recording all the tsunami bumpers, in a sense, kind of artists, because they are trying to capture that which, you know, which incites them. Incites?
Excites?
Excites them. That's excites a them. Bit better.
Yeah.
Also, what about just people who paint landscapes? Just like, oh, that's a cool looking landscape. I want to make that landscape exist in another form. Like, landscapes are just kind of weird in that sense, because it's just like, well, I just painted some mountains because I saw mountains and I wanted to recreate them somehow.
Well, I like to think of that as a lot of things is a lot of time, one thing. It's like, it's never going to be like that way again.
Mm.
So... And the other thing is people across the world can now kind of view this place without having ever actually been.
Yeah.
So it's like transferring the view of the artist to other people. He's like, I saw this. It's like telling a story. It's like, oh, well, I saw this mountain. It was great. But instead of just saying, I saw this mountain, look at this mountain I saw.
Yeah.
And then he's just kind of transferring his own sight.
It's like, listen, you had to be there. This is kind of close.
Yeah.
But, you know, now with photography and everything, you can continue to have that sort of capturing a moment and recording a moment, but you lose a lot of the skill involved. In some sense, like, you know, people take a lot of bad pictures.
Yes, they do. But like, you get a good photography is very, I think is very much an art. If you get a really good photographer, they're very able to capture everything, just like say an artist would. It's just in a different format.
But then it goes back to being a matter of context. Like, I think, because I've seen a lot of photo, like, unless you break it down to a matter of, like, you know, composition and lighting and all those things to make a quote-unquote good picture, like, you know, you can break it down to composition and say, like, all right, rule of thirds, here's your light, here's your five, and you can, there are, like, lots of, like, hard-to-find things that you can do. Mm-hmm. But if you want to say something like, no, in this picture it works because you see the child and you see the people and you see the reaching and you see all that, but at the same time, you know, it depends on context, because if you look at that picture and you don't have, like, the context, like, maybe you've never seen, you know, that specific toy before. Then it's just some weird thing. So has that picture failed and it's no longer a good picture because the context was not pulled across? Like, you know, I think, you know, if you're trying to do something like that, but you are showing all of these good things and you're capturing a lot, but you fail to capture enough context and you cannot communicate context, then I think it kind of fails. or you need to do something that is free of context, which might be impossible.
It might be impossible. But the other thing is, they might, as a person making art or doing this, you want to, if you're trying to, like, you know, bring over this feeling or whatever, and it's not shown through context, but not everyone will get it then, but you might not be aiming for everyone. You might be saying, like, oh, well, the people who share this who have shared this context with me will understand this painting, and they will get what it is, and that's what I care about.
Well, so that's a I had that same idea sort of a while ago, where it's a give and take between like specific context and how well something will resonate with the viewer versus sort of being vague on context, but then being able to reach a wide audience on a shallower level.
Yeah.
And I kind of want to say something like so in that sense, like, there's always sort of a give and take. Something that is well made sort of like is able to do both sides and sits like just has a wide breadth in the middle of that scale. Because I want to say something like Hitalia, actually. Like, Hitalia is something which has a very shallow level where there's lots of waka waka and it's really annoying, but a lot of people are into that and they get very into that.
Yeah.
However, if you know the context and you know about, you know, European history and all of that, and it's like, there are I've heard people who know about history talk about it and explain all of the really little, really deep jokes that actually make that show extremely fantastic. So they managed to hit sort of on both levels, where they are appealing on a, you know, more universal but very vague scale, and they're also on a very, like, a very specific and very deep reference level that, you know, kind of everybody can get out of that. So I've never seen Hitalia, and I'm pretty sure I hate it because of the Waka Waka, but that might actually be a really good show.
Well,
by those definitions.
Sometimes you may like the kind of deeper things and stuff, but it's just, you don't feel like wading through all the other stuff to get to that.
Yeah.
And that's what might turn you off of that, even though you could appreciate it. It's like, oh, that's nice that they did that, and that's kind of cool, but the other stuff just makes it not good for you.
Well, and there's also just, you know, what you want to experience, like, what you enjoy. Like, I don't really watch horror movies, and, like, I kind of can't stand gore movies. Like, it's not that I can't stand, like, it makes me feel sick or something. It's just, you know, there's enough bad stuff in the real world. I don't need to spend my off hours watching terrible things. I'd rather watch shows about, you know, like, victory and noble and happy people and things going on. So, you know, like, but, and so there's also that too. So, you know, enjoyment definitely has nothing to do with whether something is good or not, because that's the difference between objective and subjective, but it's hard to figure out what the definitions of objective are. Woo! And this is why it's hard to be a hipster?
This is why it's hard to be a hipster.
Because art?
Because art.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay. Hipsters, get off my lawn. I would love to have that, like, even if, like, I'm an old man in, like, an apartment building, I really want a lawn somehow. Maybe that'll be just, like, I'll take a pot, a long pot filled with grass, and I'll just put it right outside my door, and I'll have the door open sitting there.
What if you put it, like, down the side of the building?
Oh, yeah, just, like, so
you're on, like, the fifth floor, and there's a door that just opens out, and then 90-degree turn, there's grass just growing down the side of your building, there's lawn chairs, like, taped to it. You can't actually use it, but, you know, then if anybody tries to rappel down the building, then you can scream at those guys to get off your lawn. You damn youngin' SWAT team!